Hey, here we are again with our daily update. It's Monday.
Yep. Daily apocalyptic update.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
It's not funny, but it's like, yeah. You got to fucking joke about it. Like, what the fuck else are you going to do?
Yeah, y'all need to stay chilled out. Just chill out.
Well, yeah, that kind of goes for everything.
It's going to be all right.
Everybody chill out about stuff. It's like...
It's going to be all right.
I don't know. Like, I remember reading something a long time ago. I think it was like one of the guys from MST, of all people, like said something about like... You know, it's like, everything's going to be okay. And it's like, even if it's not okay right now, like, eventually it will be.
Yeah,
so it's
right.
Like, you know what I mean? It's like, even if it's not okay, it's still okay.
Yeah.
So, like, everybody fucking calm down about it. But, yeah, so...
I think in the next few weeks, you know, people are going to find out that not many people were as directly affected as they thought that there was going to be affected. You know what I mean? It's... People are going to be affected, but you're probably imagining it much worse than it really is going to be. It's like the difference between when you were a little kid, getting a spanking and waiting to get a spanking. Waiting to get the spanking was worse than getting
anticipation
a spanking.
You're like,
oh, that's
always...
all that shit was? Yeah, okay, I'm going to do that shit again.
Which is what little Tom would do.
Yeah, little Tom, I'd defy it. I'm like, I'm not defeated by that shit. I'm going to do that again.
Because once you get over the worst, well, it's just like I said, anticipation. It's usually like either the best or the worst part. Because like even when you're anticipating something awesome, it's usually not as awesome as you thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Like I think the best part is like waiting for the
stuff. Yeah, waiting to get into the army was fucking like harder. Waiting to get into the army and going to basic training in a way was harder than basic training.
Yeah.
Because you could deal with basic training on a daily basis. It was right there. All you just had to make sure you did your shit. You didn't fail.
Yeah.
But before going, worrying about what it was going to be like,
because
it made
you
feel like you were not in control.
Yeah. Because you didn't know what to expect.
Didn't know what to expect.
It's like, it's always kind of like that. It's weird because I was just thinking that like every time before I have to do like a radio show or something like that, it's like, even though I always try to be really prepared, it's like, while I'm sitting there waiting for them to call me, like they're waiting for Skype and stuff like that,
I'm always imagining,
it's like, what if they ask me this and I don't like remember the answer to the question? I'm just going to be sitting there going, blah, blah, blah. And like all this other kind of stuff. But then once I start talking, it turns out fine.
Yeah, it's a show like any other show. They don't ask anything out of the blue. Really.
Usually. And then I have to like think to myself, it's like, well, how many people could possibly be listening to this anyway?
Yeah. Well, if they ask you a question you don't remember, you have to just say, well, I don't really remember. It was a long time ago. I write a lot of stuff. I mean, that's the truth.
Yeah,
you
know
that
is true. I can't keep all that. I keep a lot of stuff in my brain, but not everything.
Usually they ask you generalities anyway.
That's true. And usually I can pivot and bullshit into like another slightly related question that I do remember the answer to.
Yeah, but you're not going to remember dates on which some dude disappeared. You know, about a book that you read that you wrote fucking, you know, 4 years ago.
4 years ago, because that was a long time ago, and I've written a bunch of ones since then.
Right.
Speaking of radio shows, we just did, I think Adam Sane just put up the Conspiranormal that we did with them.
Yeah.
Which... I don't even
remember it. We were fucking loaded. We were loaded.
Well, it was a fun show.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, that was another one where, because he always, like, sends me a list of, like, all the stuff he wants to talk about, which is usually, like, you know, whatever the last few weeks of our podcast topics and movies and stuff that we reviewed. And so I had, like, everything. So I had to, like, reread on a couple things, like, to just get details fresh in my mind. Did we end up talking about any of that? No. I don't think so. We talked about, like, a couple things, sort of.
Adam and his boy.
But
fucking,
then they just kind of go, we just go off on tangents, and I'm just like, well, so much for all that preparation that I did. Why did I even bother?
Adam does nothing but ask me crazy questions and shit, trying to get me to say crazy.
To get him to start going like,
because he fucking loves it. He fucking loves it.
It is pretty funny.
And he knows that when I'm on his show, I just slowly get more and more intoxicated as I go.
And then he starts ranting towards the end,
he starts asking me more and more off-the-wall questions.
Some of it they save for their patrons, which, you know, I can see why they do that. But it's like, because we always, every time we do the show, we're always on there for like at least an hour and a half.
It's
like
usually related to something that I did on a show.
Yeah.
They want me to expound on it more.
Yeah. And then sometimes you're like, don't even remember that.
Because I don't remember,
because you're like, got a truck.
Yeah, so, that's on, you know, I tell them.
I think that kind of happened, like I said, the other day we were recording, you know, the upcoming episode that's going to go up tomorrow. Unless you're a patron, in which case you've already been able to watch it. That show ended up being like almost 3.5 hours long.
Yeah.
And I did okay, I think, like when I was rewatching it, like to edit it, I'm like, you can tell I'm kind of drunk, like toward the end.
Yeah.
And I think I misnamed some people. I think I called Robert Wagner Richard Wagner, like, more than once, maybe, so, sorry.
I don't really remember.
But I think, yeah, I think Tom is always kind of, like, always drunk with me, and he's just always kind of like, oh!
I'm like, yeah, okay.
He's just like, whatever, because I'm the one that has to, like, go through the notes and try to keep coherent.
By the time you got to Natalie Wood, I was pretty trash.
You were, yeah.
That was pretty trash. Yeah.
It was pretty funny, though. It ended up a good show, I thought. It's like, it's like I said, our show is not the show you go to if you want, like, super hard-hitting, like, information, because I mess shit up all the time. It's and just, it's like, sometimes I don't realize it until I go to edit it, and I'm like, oh, I said the wrong name there, or I said something wrong, because I'm not really, I'm looking at my notes, but I'm trying not to.
It's entertainment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We're not, this isn't fucking a college class.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just, it's
that's what I mean. There's other places you can get that information. Right. We're just kind of like using it as a launching platform. A
launching platform for us to make comments on it.
You to guys kind
enjoy
of like,
it. And you guys enjoy it with us, and we fucking make comment on
that's
the bullshit other motherfuckers did a long time ago.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, so.
They got channels out there that I watch that are very similar. They just take another path. It's like young people listening to music like Black Sabbath from the 50s and them talking about it and reacting to it.
Black Sabbath isn't from the 50s.
No. 50 years ago, I meant.
Oh, okay.
50 years ago. Did I say it from the 50s?
Yeah.
Okay, I meant like from 50 years ago.
Oh, okay.
You know, 1970.
Yeah.
And they're tripping out and, you know, on old music that was old when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, those channels get a lot of hits.
Well, because I feel like it's a little bit of an outgrowth of that, you know, either young people react to X or old people react to X. You know what I mean? Which a lot of people seem to like. Some of them are really entertaining. Like, I like some of the ones where, because, you know, I like food-related stuff, obviously. But, you know, I like the ones where, like, people from different countries, like, try candy and stuff like that, like, from other countries. And, like, talking about how weird they are and shit like that.
The ones that get the biggest hits in terms of the music are basically younger black dudes listening to heavy metal.
Yeah.
And the people in the audience are telling them to listen to this song. And they're learning about heavy metal. They fucking trip out. Some of those channels, those dudes get into that shit.
Yeah.
Now. You know what I mean? Fucking. Well, black dudes didn't listen to that back in the day. But now they're like, oh, yeah. Tony Iommi. Yeah. You know, it's a.
Well, that's kind of the cool thing about the internet is that it doesn't really matter, like, how old something is anymore. Because everything is kind of, like...
Everything's out there.
Everything's out there, and it, you know, it's not like, oh, that was a long time ago, and we don't have access to it anymore.
And the old-fashioned barriers are no longer there. Anybody from any generation can get to it, because it's at the fucking...
That's what I mean. So it's just like fucking, this, everything's out there.
At the end of the fingertips.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah.
That's why I feel like, and we've had this conversation several times before, that's why I kind of feel like the whole notion of, like, a generation gap, that has largely disappeared. I mean, you still see it nowadays, like, with boomers and, like, people our age.
Yeah.
But that is, like, a remnant. I don't think, like, I've always found, because we have friends our age, we have friends much younger, like, we have friends that are, like, young enough to be our kids.
Yeah.
And I never had a problem, like, relating to them. They never seem to have a problem relating to us or anything like that, because everything is just kind of out there. And if you're into the same kind of shit, it doesn't really matter how old you are. You know what I mean?
Which, the only thing is, the only difference is the experience level and, of course, the hormones.
Well,
like, the guys are dumb. You know, like, dude, why'd you do that? You know what I mean? Why'd you say that?
I don't know.
Well, you know, no, man, that's not how it works. You know what I mean? But you know, they don't hide it from you.
But that's all. And that's like that. Everybody's in the same boat. It's like everybody did dumb shit in their teenage years. Yeah. Everybody did dumb shit in their 20s. You did, I did, everybody did. That's just part of being
that
age.
Learn how to do shit.
You're just an idiot at that age. Everyone is an idiot at that age. There's no shame in it. I'm not judging or anything like that, because I went through the same thing. I was also an idiot in my 20s, just like everyone else was.
Yeah.
So yeah.
People run game on you and you don't even know. You look back on it and go, man, that was the dude that stole my girlfriend. Had to be.
God damn it.
Not even see it. That
I
kind
was
of shit.
So
you
dumb.
Know. Yeah, right.
Well, at least you were dumber than that guy who stole the girlfriend.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe he was like slightly smarter.
Slightly smarter. That must have been the dude that stole the girlfriend. It was right there in front of me.
I didn't even notice.
Didn't even notice it. Yeah. It had to have been him. That kind of shit.
So let's do a little bit of like, let's see, a day in the life or something like that. What did you do today, Thomas?
I was just, nothing really.
Were you surprised I pulled that out
on you? Okay, I was listening to the fucking the COVID updates. You know, that one doctor in England who's constantly reading off all the stats. I don't trust any of this, any of the information that they put out, because it's all based upon, the data is all based upon tests on people who tested positive. They're not testing enough people to know how much of it's.
Well, out there. I mean, logistically, yeah. That would.
Yeah,
be
it's
very,
not
very
possible
to do.
It's too expensive. Is
so it's like I think the thing is, I don't think anybody is like trying to like deceive anybody. They're just like, well, this is the best shit we can do
yeah,
right
they,
now.
They just don't know. All they
you
do,
know what
all,
I mean? But all, nobody knows like what the whole.
All they know is how many people show up to the hospital,
yeah,
fucking sick as shit. How many of them recover?
Yeah.
And how many of them die?
Which, like I said, that's about all you can
yeah,
hope for.
Yeah,
in
don't
this
worry
situation.
About how many cases are out there. They don't know.
Yeah, and like I said, a lot of people might get it and not.
And they never go to the hospital.
And they never go to the hospital because it never gets bad enough,
right.
Or they never realize they have it or something.
The only
like
thing
that, so.
That they can look at is, the only thing that they know is how many people were sick enough to go to the hospital and how many of them died and how many of them lived. Most of them who get sick enough to go to the hospital live.
Yeah.
All right. So it's a science called number magic. You know, I don't believe in numbers. It's just magic. It's magical shit. You can't get averages off of unknowns.
Yeah.
You know? So really all you can do is just say, well, out of the people that go to the hospital, this is the percentage that live and this is the percentage that die. Kind of what they're looking at is, out of the percentage of the people that go to the hospital, looks like about, what, 15% of them die. That's still pretty good.
Yeah.
Because there's a whole shit ton more people that didn't go to the hospital.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. You're just seeing, like, the very, very worst cases.
You're just seeing the ones that went to the hospital.
Right.
And most people catch this and don't even know it.
Yeah. So, like I said, yeah. I'm honestly less worried about the virus itself as, like, you know, the economic impact, like, how that's going to be and, like, you know, how that's going to affect, like, you know, how much money I'm going to make and all this other kind of stuff. It's like, you know, am I going to be able to pay my bills? Am I going to this and that and the other? So I'm not worried about that either horribly, but it's like that is actually a more pressing concern for me than the illness itself. Just because I, you know, have the privilege of being healthy and I, you know, work at home anyway, so I don't have to go out and like deal with people. So it's probably very unlikely that I would contract it anyways. So
yeah,
I'm kind of more worried about money.
Yeah, and that, that fatality number changes, you know, with each country, and they all compute it in different ways to try to make it look better or worse. If off the top of my head, it looked like to me, I think it's about 15% of them that go to the hospital die.
Yeah,
that's when the plague is fucking hitting hard. You know what I mean? When the that was kind of like what the number would have been like in Wuhan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When with a totally packed medical system who can't treat very many people anymore because it's fucking filled, look like about 15%. But we don't know how many didn't go.
Yeah.
That still might only be 3%.
That's what I mean. So
right.
you can't really get like an accurate assessment.
You can't
because you don't know like
you don't
how
know
big
how many
the pool is. Right.
Right.
So, you know, like I said, no one's being deceptive. It's just that they have incomplete information and they're trying to give you the best information that they have.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's all you can do. My day, I got up really early, went for my walk. I've been working on recording and editing some short stories for the Witching Hour show, which is coming up this week. So, you know, that'll be up on Thursday if you guys that like to listen to that. And getting some shit ready for the next episode of the podcast, because I like to, like, keep shit ahead of everything. Also, for some reason today, because, you know, like I said, I'm going to start doing, like, book recommendations and shit like that. For some reason today, I was like, you know, I am going to, like, recommend some Edward Gorey. Because I don't know, maybe like I think a lot of older goths like know about him and stuff like that, but I think a lot of younger people maybe don't, because I mean, he died in 2000. I kind of got into him. He's more an illustrator, but he writes, he wrote little books too, like a lot of it was like weird poems and like this kind of like weird surrealist kind of shit that he always had.
Yeah, back in the day, back in the 90s, goth girls tend to have this Edward Gorey stuff around their house.
Yeah.
Little pictures and posters and kind of had these, you know, he had a motif that kind of looked like something out of the Addams Family.
Charles Addams, his stuff was a little more like cartoony, a little more like comic strip looking, whereas Edward Gorey's was like really, his was very like Victorian, Edwardian looking, and it was like this really, really intricate pen work that was like these little little patterns and like little fucking vases and stuff.
The average guy, though, he hasn't seen the real Addams Family comic strip.
Yeah.
He would just see ever gory stuff and go, yeah, kind of like the Addams Family.
Yeah, it's similar in that way, like in the sense that it's kind of like macabre and stuff.
Yeah, kind of spooky looking, a little elongated.
I feel like Edward Gorey was like always such a fascinating dude to me. He was
weird,
just
dude.
Like
wore a coat all the time.
He did. He wore like this big coat, and he would go to the ballet. I think I read this book. I have this book like called that's all the interviews with him, or like most of the interviews with him. See, it's called Ascending Peculiarity, and it's all interviews with him.
You can see the little drawings that he does.
Yeah, I have a bunch of other stuff I'm going to show too, but.
Okay.
But yeah, he was one of those guys where he was like super, super eccentric, but not like in a weird, like insufferable kind of way. He was just like a weird dude. And that was just Edward Gorey. He just had this big beard. He had this big coat. He went to the ballet every single day. Like he loved the ballet, and he was like, I think he lived on Cape Cod and he just lived with a bunch of cats. You know what I mean? Cause he loved cats. So he was just like this really weird, eccentric dude. And he did all this kind of cool shit. I don't have it, like, right here. It's back there on the shelf. But I have, like, a box set. Because in 1977, he did all the stage production. They did, like, a stage production of Dracula. And he did all the sets, like, all the backgrounds and stuff like that. And it is really, really cool. So I have, like, this little thing that you can build, like, out of, like, chipboard or, like, heavy paper or whatever that looks like the sets that he built for Dracula. Like, it's a 3D type, like, you know, whatever that you can make. And it's really, really cool. But, yeah, I first got into him because, you know, back in the 70s, remember that PBS show Mystery? And I think that was probably the first time I had seen his artwork. Like,
yeah, he did, like, the intro.
The intro, like, animation for it. But I think when I was a kid, the first time that I ever saw his art, like his illustrations, like big time, was in the John Belair's book, The House with a Clock in Its Walls. You know, this,
I remember that.
Yeah, because like I don't have like this. This is not his illustration because this is like a, you know, a trilogy. Like it has all three of them in there. But inside it does have his illustrations for that.
It does? Because yeah. I remembered as a kid, it was kind of creepy looking.
Yeah, he did like picture. All kind of like creepy. Yeah, yeah, he does like all these really creepy. That might not be. Because some of the ones, like, you have to be, like, kind of near the beginning.
There it is.
Yeah, there's one.
Weird
that's,
shit like
that's
that.
That's definitely him. But, yeah, little Louis Barnevelt there.
Yeah, and it kind of had a somber feel to it.
Now, most of his books were, like, pretty little. Like, he would just do, like I said, he usually did, like, little limericks and stuff. And, like I said, they were really surrealist. Like, a lot of them didn't really make any sense. Or they were, like, word games.
Most of it didn't make any sense.
Or, they're, like, word games or word puzzles. Or so, like I said, he was a surrealist. So sometimes, like, probably his most famous one nowadays is the Gashlycrom Tinies, which is, like, the alphabetical poem about all the little kids and how they died. Like, I even have, like, a big poster of that, and that's probably one of my favorite things.
Yeah, to tell you guys the truth, I didn't get most of his humor. I didn't really like it. I mean, the drawings, I liked them.
Yeah.
But his humor was just so weird that I was just like, what the fuck's he talking about?
Because you know how Tom is.
Yeah, you know, what the fuck? What the fuck's he talking about?
Man, well, that's what I mean. He's not trying to talk about anything. He's trying to be. It's like I said, it's surrealism.
Oscar Wilde shit.
Well, not really. Oscar Wilde. Well, that was a different
thing.
She's
a brainiac. She knows the difference.
But yeah, so.
To me, it's all just kind of like. Nonsense. It's like nonsense. So I'm like, oh man, get out of here.
But it is not, and he even says that he wanted it to be nonsense because that's what he was into.
Yeah.
But since most of his books are really small, and like some of like when he died, they found like a whole bunch of unpublished shit. Like so, they're still like you know doing several publishing things like in little hardback books and stuff. But these are really good. Like most of the like this one is called Amphigory, and that has like his first 15 books in it, I believe. And then he also did Amphigory 2, which I have also a whole bunch more in there. And this is Amphigory also. Now, there's one more that I think came out in 2006 that was maybe some unpublished stuff or some rare stuff, but I don't have that one yet, unfortunately. But all of them are cool. Like, probably my favorite little books of his are The Beastly Baby, which is about this horrible baby that, like, everyone hates, and they're always trying to, like, leave him places. Like, they're trying to leave him in, like, in the bottom of a restaurant, or they're trying to, like, leave little knives around him so he'll kill himself, and also because he's so horrible. And it's, like, that's probably my favorite. And then there's one called The Loathsome Couple about these two criminals. You know, that one's pretty funny. But, like, they're all good. Like, some of them are weirder than others, because like some of them obviously don't even have a narrative. Some of them do kind of have a narrative, but they're still kind of like these weird, unsettling stories and like little morality plays and stuff like that, because he was really into like just creepy like Victorian type of shit that was like, and he wrote like all under all these like weird pseudonyms that were all like anagrams of his name or, you know, like German versions of his name and stuff like that. So he would do like all kind of weird shit like that.
I've noticed that his fans are mostly female. I think, I don't know, there's just something about that kind of humor. It appeals to young women.
I don't even know if I'd call it humor. It's funny. Like, some of them are funny.
It's just some kind of weird form of entertainment.
But they're... Yeah, I mean, there's nobody like him, really. There never was, and I don't think there ever will be.
Closest person to him I would think that it ever existed would be kind of like Salvador Dali. That's another dude who's kind of an absurdist.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because you're just kind of, like, trying to make a point that, like, nothing really makes sense, so, like, why the fuck should I even try making sense? And I feel like that's kind of what Edward Gorey, that's where he was coming from, and it's really weird to me and kind of awesome that somebody as eccentric as him is so well-known still. You know what I mean? Because usually someone with his very specific kind of vision and this very specific weird kind of, like, surrealist humor that he had... that usually doesn't translate to a wide audience, but for whatever reason, his stuff just kind of seemed to strike a chord with a lot of people. This is probably a while back, but at the art museum here in Orlando, I think this is probably maybe like 8 or 9 years ago, they had an Edward Gorey, exhibit. And so I actually went there and, like, you know, I bought some stuff. I got a t-shirt. I got all kind of shit. But yeah, I've got all kind of Edward Gorey stuff. Like, other than that, I've got like little postcards and shirts and stuff like that, because I just always loved that aesthetic. I was immediately, as soon as I read that John Belair's book, I was like immediately taken by that style. And then when I found out that he wrote his own books and he had like all these weird little poems and stuff, I got super super into it. But yeah,
I actually kind of preferred Salvador Dali, because that was just in your face, just fucking absurdism.
Yeah, he was kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I've been to the Dali Museum in St. Petersburg, too, like when I lived over there.
He did some weird films where he's out on people out on platforms playing piano. He was playing a piano in the ocean, wasn't he?
I think so, if I remember correctly.
And certain fucking waves crashing over him. Just,
well, his most famous one was Un Chien Andalou.
Yeah.
Andalusian dog. That one with, like, the ants coming out of the hand and, like, the sliced eyeball and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. That was him.
Crazy shit.
And Buñuel. Those two made that movie.
One mustache, famous. One side of a mustache, because he didn't need the other side, because he just tore.
Man,
one
he
side.
Did some cool just shit. Some like weird. When I went to the Dali Museum in St. Petersburg, like I said, this is probably like 12, 13, 15 years ago, something like that. He did some amazing shit. Like, he had this like really cool, like these really weird like chess sets that he made. I think the most impressive thing for me was seeing the Temptation of St. Anthony in person. I did not realize how fucking ginormous that painting is. It was really, really big.
I forgot which one that it was. Which one's that?
It's just, well, it's kind of hard to describe, but there was a, you know, you can Google it.
All right.
But yeah, it was, I didn't realize that it was that large. So it was like, I was like, what?
LSD had to have been involved.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, LSD was involved. It had to be.
Most things that occur, yes, LSD was involved. All right, so you want to wrap up the Monday show?
Yeah, that's it. That's all right,
we're going to wrap it up for Monday. So be safe, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.